Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway, off-Broadway, and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Laura Benanti. Theater fans will know Benanti's work well ever since she turned heads as Maria in the 1998 Broadway revival of The Sound of Music. Since then, she starred in everything from Nine to Into the Woods to She Loves Me to Meteor Shower, won a Tony opposite Patti LuPone in Gypsy, and appeared in TV shows like Nashville and Supergirl. But she's always had one part that she's considered her dream role, and she's playing it now, starring as Eliza Doolittle in Lincoln Center Theater's hit revival of My Fair Lady. Hey, Laura.
Hi.
Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, let's talk about what the role of Eliza Doolittle has meant to you sort of growing up and like why it was so important to you.
Well, both my parents were actors, mm-hmm. my mom and my dad, Marty. And then when I was really little, they got divorced. I'm fine. And then my mom.
Where was this? This was in the New York
this
area?
This was in New York City. Yeah. So we lived on 54th and 7th. They were Broadway performers. They did actually a couple shows together. Their last show they did together when they were married was Brigadoon. And I have like a little tiny show jacket that says my name on it from when I was like 2 years old.
Wow.
Which is how old my daughter will be on Thursday.
Is she wearing it right now?
No. Okay. That would just be too fraught for me. That's like, I'll just like bring that into therapy.
Okay, yeah.
Just her wearing that little jacket of my my torn apart youth. Just kidding. Just kidding. I'm totally fine. So my mom remarried my dad, Sal, who is a psychotherapist. Really, really good turn of events for everyone involved. And we lived in New Jersey. We moved out to New Jersey. So, and then I was like among little kids who, before I had just been with grown-ups really, like Broadway grown-ups backstage.
Right.
So people just like, you know, dressed up in their costumes, like singing to me, and it was kind of magical. And then I was like in a very rural part of New Jersey where no one even knew what a musical was, and it was not great.
Yeah.
So my mom used to play me records. She played me She Loves Me and My Fair Lady and Annie and, you know, Julie Andrews and just all of the shows.
Right, right.
And in particular, Julie Andrews was my favorite, like hands down, which now is also my daughter's favorite. And she actually whispers her name when you're like, who's that? And she's like, Julie Andrews. With just the tiniest bit of a British accent, too, which
aww.
I'm so proud of. I want her to be as affected as possible.
Yeah.
Growing up. So when I was like 4 or 5 years old, my mom would read me like the insert of the album and we would listen to My Fair Lady. And I just always growing up, I was like, this is my dream part. I mean, if you look back at any interview from the time I started when I was 18 till now.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, they're like, what's your dream role? I'm like,
that's like not a, this is like not a secret that you were revealing at last, right?
No. Is, and like any time I was able to host anything, it was always just a shameless plug to be like, and I'd also like to play Eliza Doolittle. So, you know, when the revival came around,
yeah.
I had just had my daughter.
Right.
And they were seeing people and they were having people audition. And, you know, they sent me the material, which was like 45 pages worth of material where I was like, buy a ticket.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't even get it together to do the audition. Can't do it. And I genuinely made peace with it.
I was going to say, how hard was that?
Because
that must
I
have
cried.
Been,
yeah. I for sure cried where sure. I was like, gosh, two dreams. You know, these are two dreams. I've always wanted to be a mom, truly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've always wanted to play this part. But priorities. One
sure,
is, you know,
yeah.
here
yeah.
I have this like remarkable little person. And I was actually saying this the other day to my friend that it really is a lesson in like true, like radical acceptance. Mm. In that I genuinely had to make peace with it. It wasn't like lip service where I was like, I'm fine. No, she's going to be great. It wasn't that sort of terse, really actually wanting it to fail. Like, I had made peace with it. I wanted it to do well. I was admiring it from afar and just genuinely living my life and doing Meteor Shower and...
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know,
you
some really cool
doing
things.
Other stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, right.
But so when it came back around, it was just like, it was... so exciting to me.
Well, so let's talk about. Well, first of all, you saw the original cast.
And I did.
What did you think? Was that?
I thought it was beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was beautiful. I was so. Lauren is such a permeable performer. You know, you can really sort of
This is Lauren Ambrose.
Lauren Ambrose, sorry. Eliza. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. She was just brilliant, you know. I thought she was her performance was so raw and touching and so vulnerable.
As an actor, are you the kind of actor who watches other people play roles you'd like to play and think about how you'd do it differently, or how hard is it to get lost, I guess, in someone else's performance of something that you have done or want
that's
to do?
That's a really great question.
Thanks.
That's a really, really great question. I think it's probably impossible, because I'm a human being, to not have some sense of, like, this is, you know, getting... I got lost in it for sure. I definitely got lost in the story, especially in this newfound version of it.
Yeah.
But also I should say that I was watching it with the eyes on the idea that I was going to play the part. They had offered it to me at that point.
Oh, okay. So you hadn't seen it before then.
I hadn't seen it before. Because I was honestly, it was going to be a little too sad for me.
Yeah.
I think if I had gone to see it, I don't think I would have been truly able to just like sit back and enjoy it.
Right.
like I'm going to be able to go, like I would love to, I can't wait to see Kelly O'Hara and Kiss Me, Kate.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because that's not a part I've ever been like, I want to play that part.
Right.
And I'm such a fan of hers. I think she's so remarkable that I'm like literally counting the days where I'm like, I can't wait to see her do that. but something like your dream part, I think it would just be a little bit hard to just sit there and be like, I'm just watching a story.
Yeah.
You know, and instead of thinking, I wish I was doing it. Not I wish this other person wasn't doing it, but I wish I could also do it.
Right, yeah. And so when it came... Were you surprised by the call, I guess?
I was shocked.
Yeah.
I was really, really shocked. And it's funny because Bart called and he was like, do you want to do it? And I was like, are you asking me to audition?
This is Bart Lesher, the director.
Yes. Yep. Ew, I'm that person who's like, and then...
No, that's cool.
I'm sorry. gross. But when I was like, are you asking me to audition? And he was like, no, I'm just offering it to you. So that was nice too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so when I was watching it, I was able to be swept away by the story because I knew I was going to have an opportunity to take it on.
Right. And what's your sense then of how your Eliza ended up being different from Lauren's Eliza?
I think that my tendency is to approach things through the lens of a sense of humor. Mm. That's how I cope with things. And so for someone like Eliza, like the way my take on how she... it was able to get through a life basically on the streets from the time she was a young girl. And look, I'm not 20, you know, which is normally the age of the person playing this role. I'm 39.
Right.
So for me, I had to wrap my brain around she's been living this life for quite some time. And I think the only way one could possibly do that without just turning into dust or losing... all hope is through a sense of humor. And I think that there's some genuinely really, really funny things in this show. Mm-hmm. So I think that's probably the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. Lauren has such a beautifully, like, vulnerable quality to her that's sort of guileless. Whereas I think for me, when I try to do that, it feels a little false. Mm. I tend to have an air of like capability about me. So I feel like my Eliza probably from the get-go is a little more just self-aware, you know, and a little more ambitious. She's not a person who something is happening to them. It's like she's making it happen.
And that's definitely in there, which is a thing that I was reminded of when I saw when this revival came around again, is that how sort of active she is in her
She has tremendous agency. Yeah, you know, he's the one who says, you know, I can make you into a duchess. And she memorizes his address and shows up and says, great, do it.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
And so now that you've lived with this role for as long as you have and you're performing it and you're obviously enjoying it because you're going to do it for several months longer. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
What surprised you about the part and about the
musical? It's so hard. It's so hard.
What about
just physically? Like, well, also some of this is Bart's fault. And if you're listening,
sure.
Bart.
I actually believe Lauren was on the podcast and she talked about like running up and down some stairs
all
over the place.
While you sing, I could have danced all night.
Yeah, that's rough.
He's like, oh, what can we do to make this harder?
Yeah.
How about you go up and down a flight of like a circular staircase?
Yep. It's a whole lot of stairs.
I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
But no, it's just to do it, you know, 7 times a week is what I'm doing, which is right. such a blessing. But to do it 7 times a week, and in particular to have a toddler
yeah.
while I do it, is really, really challenging. It is, it requires, it's the most demanding part I think I'll probably play.
Yeah.
Just vocally and in, it's like a play and an operetta. Just vocally.
Right.
But also you're belting. Right. You know, in the beginning when you're the Cockney mm-hmm. flower girl, it's a lot more like in your mask and a lot more guttural. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden when you become proper, it's like she's a soprano now.
Right.
So you have right. to have all parts of your voice has to be really seamless.
Right.
And then you have your two hardest scenes toward the end of this 3-hour play.
Yeah.
So it's really... It requires a tremendous amount of energy.
Yeah. What do you do to maintain that as a, you know, drink a lot of tea or, you know,
yeah,
sleep
I don't
a lot?
Know.
Yeah.
I meditate. Mm. I have a woman named Marcia Polis who, like, keeps my body mm-hmm. working.
Yeah, that's something, as I understand it, a lot of performers have. They go to someone who helps them sort of check in with themselves.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. Especially because I'm like carrying a person all the time
yeah,
who's
yeah.
like very tall, but is also like up.
Yeah.
And then when I pick her up, it's just like, cool. Like she doesn't like hold on at all. She's just like arms out.
Right.
And then also I have like 3 different voice teachers. I have Liz Kaplan, who I work with,
yep.
Tessa Lang, and then my mom.
Right.
So, cause I get different things from all of them.
Right.
And, so I have, like, and my angel of a husband who wakes up every morning except for Monday with our daughter. And every night he puts her to bed except for Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, which are my nights off.
Right.
So I could not be doing this without him. If it were not for him, this would be impossible.
Right. Yeah. How did you find the accent? Is the accent hard? Is the, like, what, does that come easily to you? What was that process?
Liz Smith was our dialect coach. Mm-hmm. She's from Juilliard mm-hmm. and she scared me. She's a very scary person. And she was like, no, that's terrible. And then I kept working on it. I still do the exercises every day. But now it's become just a more of a part of me. The first few days I was like, huh, I sound Jamaican. So that's cool. The proper I always had down because growing up in New Jersey, being obsessed with musical theater, I kind of had a slight British accent because everything I loved was like from the yep. 40s and 50s, and I love Julie Andrews.
Right.
If you watch old like interviews of me when I'm 18, I legitimately sound like an English person. Like I went to an audition one time and they were like, where are you from? And I was like, New Jersey. And they were like, you sound British. And I was like, no. It was just, and yeah, it wasn't great. I dropped that.
Yeah, no, well done. Well done.
Thanks.
Yeah. The My Fair Lady deals pretty explicitly with these like themes of sort of gender and power dynamics, and they sit really
class.
Interestingly
yeah.
in class, right? That sit, I mean, as they sort of do in any time, but in particular in this time, mm-hmm. they sort of resonate in you know, interesting in new ways. What's your take on sort of how the show lands now for people?
Well, I think, you know, we are a more socioeconomically divided culture than ever, mm. you know. And I think that's something that the 99% of us who do not hold the majority of the world's wealth feel.
Right.
And I think the idea that someone can change the trajectory of their life through the way that they present themselves is interesting. I think, you know, it's different in that she was a woman, which, you know, wasn't great for her. But at least she was white.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Now, yeah. I think so much about privilege. I think about it constantly. Right. And how unaware I have been of my own white privilege.
Right.
And so that's something that I really think about in terms of this show now. And what I really appreciate about Bart in terms of his casting. You know, Christian Dante White is African-American. Mm-hmm. You know, Joanna is African-American.
Yeah, he plays Freddie.
Yes, and, yes, he plays Freddie.
He, Broadway folks might have seen him in Hello, Dolly.
He was Gavin's understudy,
exactly.
Creel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's important that you see people of color in our show. And it also, I think, gets you thinking more about that
right.
Issue, which is large and looming right now in our culture.
Yeah. What's it like to... How much freedom do you have? Did you have to create your own character when you were stepping into this kind of, you know, machine that mm-hmm. is going with all these other people, some of whom are new and some of whom were not?
A tremendous amount. I mean, that was something that Bart and I talked about, where I was like, we could not be more different, Lauren and I. I mean that with the utmost respect. Like, she does things I am not capable of doing. Right. Like, her take on it is something that I could try, but it would be like an ill-fitting outfit. And on her, it was like absolutely stunningly glorious. I have so much admiration for her. It's weird to talk about. It's hard to talk about the differences between our performance without worrying that I'm going to sound like I'm comparing mine favorably to hers, right. Which is not how I feel at all. I've always been a great admirer of her. But yeah, they gave me a tremendous amount of freedom. And Bart said that from the beginning. He was like, you know, you can only be yourself, and I'm asking you because I think audiences would like to see your take on it as well.
How much time did you have to figure it out?
I had very little time.
Yeah.
And I didn't have Bart a lot because he was doing To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
So it was myself and our incredible stage manager, Jen Ray Moore, right. And then the assistant director at the time, Maggie Burroughs. Mm. So we did it together. You know, and I had not even met Harry Haddon Payton until the night we went on together.
Oh, is that true?
Yes. He was off shooting the Downton Abbey movie. We met one time for 15 minutes in his dressing room. And then the very first... So we never rehearsed together except for the day I went into the show. It was bananas.
Is that like easy for you?
No.
Or is that totally nerve-wracking?
No,
is it as nerve-wracking as it sounds?
Yes,
I mean, it really... Okay,
it's totally... No, look, it made for some really interesting listening and really interesting theater. And I asked them, I was like, can y'all please make an announcement to the audience that we've never even met each other? Mm-hmm. So that if it's like just a big trash fire that they're like, well, there's why, you know? And it actually turned out he's such a remarkable actor. Yeah. I mean, he is a tremendous talent, and I love being on stage with him. You know, the first couple of weeks, it was really exciting. And then I think we did get to a point where it was a little challenging that we had not been in a rehearsal room together. We had not really spoken about our take on the play and our take on the characters, and we only knew each other as our characters. Right. We never had any time to, like, know each other as humans. So there were a few weeks there that were, like, I think a little bumpy. Mm. As we were trying to, like, navigate this onstage relationship without ever having had the proper rehearsal time. Right. Now it's in, I feel like, a really good space where...
Is that something you just got through through sort of performances? Did you talk about it?
We talked about it. Yeah, we talked about it, and Bart came in, and he worked with us, and so we were able to have, like... You know, certainly not the 6 or 7 weeks that you normally get with someone, but we had a few hours at least. And I think, you know, we got through that weird time of being re-reviewed, you know, where there's tension between people, but just tension in the air of, like, what's going to happen. And so now it's in, like, a really fun spot where I feel like we're just playing, which is such a great way to be able to live your life and make a living.
Yeah. Was there any hesitation in extending it? Like, is it just full on fun and you...
My only hesitation is my child, you know, it's hard for me not to be able to put her to bed every single night, but you know, that's the working parent's plight.
Right.
And I get to see my daughter a lot more than a lot of working parents, you know, who work, leave their house at 8:30 and don't get home till 7. There are days where I see her all day long. And from Sunday night to Wednesday morning, I am utterly devoted to her. And, you know, I'm always utterly devoted to her, but I spend every waking second with her.
Yeah, right. And what's your favorite song to sing?
Ooh. I could have danced all night.
Yeah.
I've been singing it since I was 4, you know. The first few times I couldn't get through it because I was crying. Hmm. Yeah, that, like, my first performance, I cried the whole way. Because I was just out of gratitude. And I'm not, like, a tears of gratitude sort of a person. But I am now.
But you were then, yeah.
Yeah, I am now. Yeah. Since I had Ella, I've definitely become more of, like, a hashtag blessed type of a lady.
What song is the hardest to sing?
They're all wickedly hard, let me tell you. They sit in the break for me. You know, there's... Okay. Just You Wait is
what
hard.
Does that mean for people who don't know singing
so
terms?
So for me, I'll just speak for my own voice, as a soprano, there is a moment in my voice where I segue from like my chest voice belting into a head voice singing, and that's like in your mask, and it's called your passaggio.
Yeah.
And you have to really negotiate those notes in there, which is fine. It's just really hard when like three of the songs basically live on those three notes the entire time.
Right.
And you're crying, and you're yelling.
Yeah, right. And you're acting. And you're doing
acting.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
So, like, Show Me is really, really hard.
Uh-huh.
And Without You is really hard. I find those songs to be the most challenging. But the good news is they are so driven by action that I have now that I've really worked them into my voice, I feel much more comfortable with them, and I just let it go, and whatever comes out, comes out.
What did you find hardest in terms of the acting side of it, and in terms of the figuring out sort of who Eliza was for you?
Well, my whole life I had sort of an idea of who she was, and why she is suddenly able to say The Rain in Spain after scenes and scenes of not being able to, why in a heartbeat she's able to switch into it. And so for me, the way I've approached it is that she is looking to better herself, for sure, but she is also simply looking for people to be kind to her. You know, she grew up clearly in a household with no mother and a drunken father, who is hilarious.
Played by Danny Burstein.
Played by Danny Burstein, yes. And he's
delightful.
He is absolutely delightful. And Norbert Leo Butz before him.
Right.
And Danny brings to it, he's scary sometimes, you know, which is helpful in a way, because you are able to see the life that she came from, why she has had to be so tough. You know, for me, it didn't feel organic to have her be sort of like overly vulnerable in the beginning, because I don't think she would have lasted,
right.
You know? So my take on her is that she is able to sort of parrot back the way people talk to her. It's all aural. But only if they are kind to her.
Right.
You know? So for me, the idea that she's just not getting it, is because Higgins is presenting it in such a way that is unkind.
Mm.
You know? He's mocking her. He is, you know, treating her in a way that keeps her defenses up.
Right.
So when he has that beautiful moment where he basically says, like, you can do this, you will do this, and he is for the first time gentle and dare I say, loving, she's able to assimilate everything that he's been teaching her all along.
Right.
So for me, and then it was also important to me that the audience see that she's continuing to work between The Rain in Spain and the ball.
Right.
That, you know, I could have danced all night and the Ask It scene. She's still a person in process, you know. Otherwise, to me, it's a little too musical theater magical-y.
Right.
So that's something I really focused on.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the other stuff you're doing.
Okay.
How often do you dress up as Melania Trump and go on Colbert? Just when they call?
Whenever they call, or
okay,
if I pitch something to them. Sometimes
I'll, does that happen?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sometimes I'll be like, hey, did you see this? I have a funny idea. And then other times they're like, are you around on Thursday?
Yeah.
You
right,
know?
Right.
That tends to happen more. Sometimes even at this point, I've been working with them for so long and I feel so comfortable with them. But even at this point, I feel weird being like, hey, I have a pitch,
right.
You know, even though they're so welcoming of it. But yeah, I haven't been on since the Christmas special.
Yeah, it's been a lot. Yeah. 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 And so what's your advice for a good Melania impression? If someone else were to try and do it?
You know, the key to mine is a great hair and makeup team.
Right.
You know.
Right. So get one of those.
In Paul Warren and Min Min Ma and fabulous writers from The Colbert Show.
Right.
But I think of her as America, you know, that we're all reluctantly married to Donald Trump. So I think the only way to make it like a truly enjoyable thing to watch, rather than making fun of her and being cruel to her, is to have her actually be one of us. And by one of us, I mean the people who feels like we're reluctantly married to him.
Right. Yeah.
And don't want to be.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you think of TV? You've done a lot of TV.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think of TV as fitting into your overall career?
It's like, something
what is
that I'm very, very interested in.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that my next job after this is on television. Yeah. You know, I have an idea right now with Tommy Cale, who is the director of Hamilton, yes. And he's directing Fosse right now on FX.
Yeah.
That I'm really excited about. It's a television idea.
Cool.
That excites
comedy,
me.
Comedy, drama?
Comedy.
Okay.
My friend Kelly Hutchinson, who's a wonderful writer, she and I have an idea that's like a loving send-up of those like Hallmark Christmas movies.
Oh.
So we're working on that. TV I feel like is the next thing I want to do. Look, theater is always going to be like my first love, my greatest love. But I do want to be able to have more sort of agency over my own career. Mm-hmm. As I'm getting older, it's important to me that I be able to create and produce things. And right now we're in this like golden era of television. And those things last forever, and I want my daughter to be able to experience that and also experience the ephemeral beauty of theater.
Has she seen My Fair Lady?
She's seen the first act of My Fair Lady.
Wow.
And she's going to see it again on Thursday on her birthday.
Oh,
just
yeah.
The first act.
Aw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really sweet. She says, Mama sings vanilla ice cream and chocolate. Because I sing lots of chocolate.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Me. I'm like, yes, good call.
Yeah. Is she going to be musical?
Oh, God, I think so. Yeah. I'm so torn because sometimes I feel like maybe I shouldn't bring her to all of my jobs. Like, I bring her always to Colbert. She comes in between shows. She's always at the theater. Last night, I had a benefit concert at 54 Below for, Immigrant Families Together, and she came and I think, gosh, maybe I'm just like pushing it on her. But at the same time, this is what I do, and I love her. I don't want to spend time with her. So maybe someone can just get her like a chemistry set for her birthday, and then we'll call it a day.
Yeah.
Teach her how to code.
Right. So now that a lot you could check Eliza off your list, mm-hmm. what's next for you? What else is in your sort of pantheon of dream roles?
In the theater?
Yeah, or not?
You know, I love Sondheim so much. Mm. I would, you know, when I am older, I would love to do a little night music, you know.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I would love for my mom to play,
In little night music?
Yeah.
Not Madame Armfeld.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. I think that would be really cool.
It would.
To be able to do that. You know, maybe something in the park with George. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That could be something fun to do at like an Encores or they already did that. Never mind. Or maybe in D.C. somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, after this, I'm really, unless it's something that's new, you know, I would really love to do a new musical.
When was the last time you did one, actually?
A brand new musical, Women on the Verge.
Women on the Verge. Yeah, I was going to say, that was Women on the Verge. So yeah. That was, I don't know when that was, 2007?
2010.
Oh, 10. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, great. I'd love to do a new musical. But until that happens, I'm really trying to focus on, like, TV, maybe even a movie.
Oh,
who
okay.
knows?
Cool.
Yeah, I like to stretch my my creative brain.
Right. Well, we can't wait to see what's next.
Thanks.
Can I
talk briefly about the album that I did?
Yeah, do it.
So my friend Mary Mitchell Campbell, mm-hmm. who's an incredible orchestrator and MD actually over at Mean Girls, she and I produced an album called Singing You Home, Children's Songs for Family Reunification. And all the proceeds go to reuniting the family separated at the border. You can buy it wherever streaming music is sold, iTunes, Amazon, or you can go on ghostlightrecords.com. Mm-hmm. It's a really amazing lineup. Lin-Manuel Miranda and Mandy Gonzalez and Audra McDonald, Idina Menzel, Josh Groban, Cynthia Erivo, myself, a girl named Isabella Preston, Ingrid Michelson, Anna Viafanie. Am I leaving anybody out? No. Okay. So I'm really proud of it. And, you know, all proceeds go to help reunite these families, which is really, it's getting worse. It's not getting better.
Right. Yeah. And what are the songs on the album?
They are dual language Spanish songs. So actually, one of them was written by Jason Robert Brown for Audra McDonald. It's the title song, Singing You Home.
Right.
And then there are like three or four traditional Spanish songs. And then Josh Groban and Dave Matthews wrote the song that Josh and Idina sing together called Lullaby.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's a great thing.
Thanks.
So, yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Thanks for
being here. We
thank
can't wait
you.
To see what's next. Enjoy the rest of your run.
That was Laura Benanti, now starring in the Broadway revival of My Fair Lady through July 7th. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I talk to musician Anais Mitchell and director Rachel Chavkin, two of the creators behind the buzzy, Broadway-bound musical Hadestown. Until then, see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.